Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Today's program was brought to you by Chefs Collaborative. Chefs Collaborative works to fix our broken food system by engaging chefs in a network that inspires and educates them to change how they source, cook, and serve food. For more information, visit chefscollaborative.org.
I feel like I'm a part of everyone. I don't feel like I'm part of one culture, you know. I mean, there's definitely a deep Japanese side to me and a deep Chinese side from my dad. My mom's Japanese. But, I don't know, anytime I go and meet other people, I just kind of instantly feel connected to other people. And I'm just incredibly curious about other people, especially through food. You know, I'll almost put anything in my mouth, you know, just because I'm really curious. And I like nothing more than to, you know, be invited over someone's house and have their grandmother from some other place, you know, cook a meal.
James Beard-nominated chef, author, and Seafood Watch ambassador Bun Lai talks about dreaming of fish, the urgent need for sustainability, creative sushi, the culture of eating well while doing good, and his family restaurant, Mia, in New Haven, Connecticut. Bun Lai is a future food leader.
Before I had Playboys underneath my mattress, I had the Saltwater Fisherman's Bible and the Field Guide to Reptiles and Amphibians. I used to dream about fishing when I was a kid. Like, I had a reoccurring dream that our apartment would flood. I'd go to the basement, and then I'd start fishing in the basement. I was obsessed. When I was a kid, I used to go to a little river called the Mill River, not too far from the apartments that we lived in. And I'd go drag fishing with a buddy of mine from school. I didn't know drag fishing was illegal in streams. And we'd bring these fish back, throw them in the freezer, and I'd eat some, and then I'd sell the rest to, you know, people from all sorts of different countries living in the apartments. So that's how I spent my summer, just splashing around there, or else in Long Island Sound, dragging for smelt, and then cooking those up at home. Was one of my favorite things to do as well.
Growing up in Asia, his mom and dad set the foundation for Bun's future in terms of how he thinks about food, especially fish. Years later, that foundation would come in handy when he eventually ended up at the restaurant his mother started, Mia.
When we were very poor, living in Japan, my mom would go to the fishmonger and buy one oyster and one little fish and feed it to me every day. And that's the direction that we've actually taken our restaurant. We're not crazy about using farm fish. We're not crazy about using apex species. We'd rather use fish that are lower down in the food chain, and mollusks and seaweed especially. So she was giving us omega-3 rich food and eating it herself throughout our lives. And then later, when we became good athletes, my mom would say, "Oh, you guys are champions because of the food I gave you." And that's probably not, the science supports her claim. And back then we would chuckle a little, but there's no chuckling that I do about it anymore. There's a lot of wisdom there. And the other thing is that my dad did research when I was growing up. So he's got an MD, he's got a couple PhDs, but he chose, rather than doing clinical stuff, to try to make an impact on humanity in the best way that he possibly could, and he thought that was the research. He would go to Kenya as well to do free operations, you know, to help people who had, like, cataracts and stuff like that. So when we were growing up in my family, we knew that it wasn't enough to just go out and make money. We needed to do something that had some sort of positive impact on the world. And of course, if that's what you're striving to do, it makes your job a lot more fun. I started working with my mom cooking when I was about 9 years old, helping her prep. And my dad is a fabulous cook as well, so I've always loved to cook. It's always been a part of my life, and working at Mia's has really been a part of my life since I was a little kid. Other than that, I mean, I really haven't had a career up to this point in anything other than Mia's. I didn't really want to do it because it's such a hard business. And I just came back towards the end of college to give my mom a hand because she was doing it on her own. And, you know, I just kind of hated seeing her bust her butt all the time since I was a kid. And then it evolved into something that I became incredibly passionate about, and it wasn't intentional.
Ben realized his role was also to do something for the greater good. A walk along the Sound near the restaurant sent him down an unexpected culinary path that few chefs had ever explored. Enter the invasive species.
One day I was with my buddy Yancey, who used to be a waiter at Mia's when he went to Yale, but today he's a professor of ecological anthropology. But Yancey and I were out flipping rocks about 15 minutes from where the restaurant is in the Sound, and we saw all these little crabs running around, and we tried to identify it, and then it turned out that they were an invasive Asian crab. We did eat those crabs, and we serve those crabs today. They're very popular. And from that point on, we started learning more and more about invasive species, and then I thought, wait a second, this makes perfect sense. These are species that are abundant, but they're problematic to the environment. And if we use those, maybe ideally we can help balance that ecosystem or habitat back out again. And yeah, that's how it started. And we started looking for more invasive species to use. It's definitely becoming part of the conversation. I think people are really starting to go after lionfish, for example. Part of the problem is that there's got to be demand for the species. So if you take silver carp, Asian carp, which I think are in 15 states now, and they're one of the greatest, if not the greatest threat to the Great Lakes. Americans don't like to eat carp, you know, because they think of goldfish and there's a lot of bones in it at the same time. So it takes much more work. So the number one farm fish in the entire world, carp, is disliked by Americans. And it's also a healthier fish to eat than most predatory fish because it's an herbivore, so it's lower down on the food chain, so it doesn't have the high amounts of PCBs or mercury or other contaminants. If there's demand, then people are going to find a way to get them on your plates.
As he learned more about the food system overall and the marine ecosystem, Bun began to realize the challenges that existed when it came to production, as well as consumer preference. He also realized how Big Macs and sushi have a lot in common.
The issue that I have with the cuisine of sushi and the way that it's evolved, and one of the issues, is the rice. Because it is processed rice, so now you don't have the fiber in it, and much of the nutrients are also taken out of it. And you take this white steam rice and you add massive quantities of sugar to it. So you have white rice that turns immediately to sugar combined with sugar. And sugar, too much sugar has a toxic effect on your body. And people are eating sushi thinking that they're eating food that's really healthy when on many levels it's not. Sushi is a tuna crazy cuisine. You know, it's the bedrock of sushi is tuna. And tuna is an apex predator. And as contaminants move up the food chain, they biomagnify all the way to the top. And tuna is not something that you want to be eating all the time. And the reason you're eating tuna, other than the fact that it's delicious, is because you want to eat fish for its omega-3s. And it's not even a great source for omega-3s. So I don't serve tuna. You know, we serve wild salmon from Alaska, you know, coho, which is relatively inexpensive, and it's a high source of omega-3s and reasonably low in contaminants as well, and supports a well-managed fishery. And I can go on and on and on. You know, if I start speaking about shrimp, and it might ruin your appetite for weeks. The cuisine of sushi has, as far as I'm concerned, has been bastardized and destroyed like every other cuisine that comes to America. A couple hundred years ago, and when you would get sushi, it was seafood that you found that the chef or the fisherman caught, you know, in the river or a stream or in the ocean, which was his backyard. Today, just reflective of our entire food system, nobody knows where anything's coming from. And all the seafood is seafood that got to your plate because it's competing with each other on price points. So the quality of that seafood is absolutely terrible. You know, there's that thing on YouTube where they took like a Big Mac and they let time pass. And then weeks later, that Big Mac still looks the same. You know, you can do the same thing with a lot of sushi fish that people get at sushi restaurants. A lot of that stuff is treated with carbon monoxide. So you can take a piece of tuna and it'll look vibrant for days and days and days and days and days and days. So you can't tell what's fresh anymore or what's even good to eat. And, you know, my tilapia that comes from kids at Bridgeport Aquaculture School, literally by a couple hours, it starts looking like it's bad, but it's actually still good. And yeah, I really should put that side by side with another piece of commercial sushi grade tilapia, and it's absolutely shocking and astounding, but it's kind of reflective of the direction that the cuisine of sushi has gone.
As he continued to explore and push the boundaries of the restaurant sushi menu, Bun saw how his vision was unfamiliar to many customers, which is when he realized the importance of keeping true to his culinary goals and beliefs.
There's not a day that goes by where we don't have a customer or customers come in, look at the menu, and leave. You know what? If I did sushi to just emulate the cuisine as it is and try to make that as sustainable as possible, then they wouldn't be leaving. But that's not my vision as an artist. And in the end, it's really, really important to make decisions in this constant creation of the creative process of this cuisine based on very dignified goals. So I really, really believe in the choices that I'm making. And I can't very well make everyone happy when I'm doing it. And I just know that. And every time people come up, you know, I'm in the restaurant, people look at my menu and leave, it does hurt my feelings a little bit. I mean, that doesn't go away. You know, I think artists especially are very sensitive, you know, to, you know, because you're sharing something that you care so much about with other people, and then people don't get it, you know. But I understand that it's just part of the process, and that's just how my life journey is going to go. I don't know what my role is. I don't know if I'm even really making a difference. I know I'm basically trying to, I've got very humble goals, which is with the cuisine that I have, I want it to create conversations, you know, on possible solutions or even questioning the way we choose to live and eat. I think at that, we succeed, whether we're succeeding in getting people to eat invasive species, but on a larger scale, well, that I don't know. But we got a TV show coming out, and that might change everything. But one restaurant can do only so much. What we eat and what we choose to eat has been evolving since the beginning of time. The only difference is that in the last 100 years, there's been science, you know, added to what we're eating. And today we have many, many more choices to eat in the wrong way. Our taste buds, which evolved in order to be able to seek out food that's healthy for our bodies, is now being tricked and manipulated to seek out powerful flavors contained in food that's not healthy. mother is a very spiritual person, and my father is very spiritual too. With my dad, he doesn't really talk about it very much, but he definitely is. Being multicultural as well, it wasn't just one religion that was coloring my life growing up. You know, we always had like a little shrine. So it was like a Buddhist/Shinto shrine. You know, my grandfather's who had passed away. And, you know, we'd put a little bowl of rice there and an incense and pray to them. And that was a Shinto/Buddhist ritual. But my mom would also occasionally go to work to Baptist church. And then every Sunday when I was growing up, I went to Sunday school with my brother. Religion was something that was always a part of my life. And I just love the stories as well. You know, so many of them are not just fun and interesting and entertaining, but some of the most inspiring people who have ever existed. So today, you know, I've done Seder, for instance, a handful of times. The last couple of times I did Seder was with the Panettes, you know, and Jim Panette is the head rabbi at Yale. And I've meditated with the head Buddhist chaplain at Yale as well. And I've got friends at the Yale Divinity School. I just love religion when it's really good and when it supports people and has healthy thoughts, healthy ideas. I didn't know what I was going to do, so it worked out incredibly well that I came to help my mom out for a little bit, because it really, you know, the work that I do has really become the love of my life, with the hope of creating a conversation. So with the hope that people question the things that they choose to eat. And the impacts that their choices have, not only on their bodies, but the environment, that people start to understand that there's this not so incredibly complex connection between the ecosystem of our bodies and the ecosystem of the world. And that if you want to be a healthy person, you also have to be an environmentalist and be cognizant of these things. The thing about invasive species isn't just the invasive species. It's also linked to some of the most important issues that exist in the entire world, like climate change. Climate change helps or aids the proliferation of invasive species as new warmer zones happen and invasive species move in and threaten other species with extinction. Not only that, nutrition is related to invasive species. Why? Because food security can be affected by invasive species. And not only that, invasive species as food is much healthier than anything that you can get that's farmed. So, I mean, it's there's a lot of layers to this, and it goes off in many, many different tangents. It's interesting, and it's important on its own, because invasive species are a top five ecological problem just on its own. But the actual impacts and connections are huge.
As Mia evolved over the last 30 years, so has Bun. He makes peace with who he is as a chef, artist, and son. He realizes his calling is to continue on his path at Mia, one dish at a time.
I have a lot of people who support me in the work that I do, and I'm really, really grateful for it and have throughout my life. You know, I've always had mentors, and I still have people that I look up to who are my mentors. And then you just have people who don't get what you do, and some people really hate what you do, you know, and I wish that didn't exist, the haters or the dislikers. And I don't know if it has to do with the fact that I'm not articulating myself well, or I'm not expressing myself through my food well, or my palate is completely off, and you know, maybe I don't make good food, you know, but I like everything that I do. I love everything that I do. I mean, I literally eat at my restaurant food that I had created, you know, almost every day. So, this is the food that I feed my, you know, my aging mother, you know, to take care of her heart and her brain and her body. So, for me, you know, Mia in Japanese, my mom was telling me, just reminding me the other day, means temple. So for us, what we do here, is really nothing short of what we feel to be sacred. And some people will get that, and some people won't, and we have to be fine with it.
This piece was produced by Aaron Fairbanks, Jack Inslee, and Nancy Gagliardi for HeritageRadioNetwork.org and narrated by Bitsy Kipping.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.